Blog Talk Radio.
Of David Duenez on Max Boxing. I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, joined as always from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. If you want to tweet at us, you can do so at Steve Max Boxing, at Gabriel underscore Montoya, and at Max Boxing Live. Our phone number is going to take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And Gabe, what an eventful start to the boxing season on March 1st. How you doing, Gabe?
I'm doing great, man. Great. It's a great Monday. We're getting the much-needed rain that we need, but, man, we're getting the much-needed fight that I need. I've just been, like, watching the last couple days, just catching up on everything. And from Badu Jack getting taken out in the first round to the end of Stieglitz Abraham 3, it was just a great weekend of fights all over the world.
You are right, Gabe. The drought is literally and figuratively over, sort of, in Southern California and in the sport of boxing. We begin round number one from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas, on HBO. The rematch. And it was Julio Cesar Chavez in much more definitive fashion, beating Brian Vera over 12 rounds. Chavez goes to 48-1-1. Your scores 114-113, 117-110 twice. And your co-feature for what was the vacant WBO featherweight title, more on that issue later, Orlando Salido says goodbye to the featherweight division on the scales with a 12-round split decision over the precocious Vasyl Lomachenko, who drops to 1-1. The scorecards, 115-113, 116-112, and one score for Lomachenko at 115-113. Gabe, my impression on Chavez is this. He was in better shape, but judging by some of the comments of his father and Bob Arum and talking to some of the people at Top Rank, yes, he was in better shape. Yes, he made weight. But I think it's clear, unless he wants to wear out his beard, there better be some professional training going on in that training camp, because I think that even though he's only 28, it's becoming more and more apparent, especially as he has fully moved up to super middleweight, it's becoming a very old 28.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it used to be, well, he's only 22 and he didn't have an amateur career. Give him time. Well, now he's 28. He's had a middleweight title. The things were maneuvered wonderfully for him to get. It didn't really show much respect for that by not really being in the kind of shape that he was. But on the other hand, I mean, okay, this is him in shape. And you could look at, say, like Lennox Lewis Rockman, too, and say, well, this is an in-shape Lennox Lewis. He's totally prepared, and he's a whole other level than Rockman, blows him out. In this case, Chavez Jr. is in better shape. He still goes the distance with Brian Vera. There was some question about whether it was a 10- or 12-round fight, ended up being 12. Still goes the distance. Doesn't look that great. He looks better. Maybe he's just not that good. He's got a last name. He's got a good beard. But I don't think he's ever going to grow desire or want to or get hungry. I'd like to see him, you know, maybe string together a couple of responsible performances. But at the same time, it's like, isn't that what he's supposed to be doing? He's a professional fighter on HBO making tons of money. It doesn't make a lot of sense for us to keep waiting around for this trust fund baby to grow up and actually start a business of his own, which is being in shape and, you know, being a really good fighter.
Gabe, I think that there is no doubt about what you said. And I don't know if you want to say that Top Rank is cashing in or maybe rolling the dice, but I was there 2 years ago, a Super Bowl Eve, when he fought Marco Antonio Rubio, and there was about 14,000 to 15,000. They did a very good gate, multi-million-dollar gate, of right around $2, $3 million, and the ball was rolling. Go back to the fight in September. We were both there. There was about, what, 3,500 people. On this particular day in San Antonio at the same venue as the Rubio fight, there was half that amount of 2012 or 13. There was about 7,500 people. I don't think there's any doubt that Top Rank now says, no, wait a minute, We will be the enablers if you're the cash cow, but if this brand is fading and the value is dissipating, now we're going to start making fights. And obviously the fight that he seems to want is Gennady Golovkin. I'm going to say this right now. I think that his chin, which is the one thing he certainly inherited from his father, Gabe, I think will end up being a curse. I'm sorry. I know Gennady Golovkin is unproven, but I think he's an elite talent. I think that a guy like Brian Vera, we have to be honest about it, he's more of a 54-60 pounder, and before he had this two-fight series with Chavez, we always thought he was a good, solid pro, an ESPN2 level guy, and here's Chavez somewhat struggling with him. I look at that fight as a great opportunity for Golovkin and really a beating as it relates to Julio Cesar Chavez.
Well, that was one of the things, and we'll get into it later, that was so interesting about, I use the term loosely, with the HBO broadcast. They kept going on and on about Toledo being a welterweight, which is pretty standard practice these days in this sport, the guy bleeding up a couple divisions, and it's also an unofficial scale. But at the same time, you look at Chavez Jr. and Brian Vera, I don't think of Brian Vera as a 168-pounder, much less an elite 168-pounder. Chavez Jr. looked pretty gigantic. And then even in the crowd, like Kovalev was sitting there, and Roy Jones was joking, oh, well, Max Kellerman was saying that he's probably a cruiserweight tonight, but he's 175-pounder when he fights. That's kind of the accepted deal. Like I said, we'll get into that. But Brian Vera is kind of a smallish guy, and he had really good moments in both fights, I thought. I thought he was a little more tentative in this fight and didn't quite have it, and maybe that's just Chavez being in better shape, but I have to think that Golovkin would be able to pick his spots well. I think he would take the weight well. It would be an excellent fight. I mean, I know Carl Froch is busy with his rematch. That was a fight I'd like to see, but would you see Ward Chavez Jr., or do you just think it's that much of a whitewash?
No. Here's why I think Top Rank and Chavez are going towards Golovkin. Golovkin, if you've ever stood next to him, is really closer to being a much bigger junior middleweight than a big middleweight. You look at his stature, and you don't see a big middleweight. When you see Peter Quillin, you say to yourself, how does he make 160? When you look at Golovkin, you say to yourself, how would he fit at 168? And I think that is the gamble that Top Rank is making, is that Chavez has a good beard, has a very stout chin, and he's also a guy who's a lot taller, and they might be a natural size advantage. So they're taking a calculated risk there, but I've talked to sparring partners who are as big as 210 pounds. In fact, I spoke to one today that's working out at the Ponce de Leon Boxing Club in Montebello, and that guy told me, and he told Doug Fisher a couple of years ago, this guy literally hits harder than Alexander Povetkin when he was in camp with him. I also think Brian Vera, for as good as he's become under Ronnie Shields, he's an overachiever. He does not have the natural skill set or the tools or the fluidity of a Gennady Golovkin. And I think Golovkin, if you don't box, if you're going to stand in the pocket and be a tough guy with them, well, Chavez is just going to provide a bigger target. Now, if you look at some of the choices that Aram is talking about, Gabe, Golovkin, Carl Froch, and Jean Pascal, looking at all the dynamics and all the political situations in boxing and who HBO would want, I don't think there's any doubt. I think Golovkin-Chavez is the fight that best serves everyone's needs. And as for Andre Ward, Gabe, right now he's in semi-retirement. He's in litigation to a point you can't even talk about a fight with Andre Ward. But even if Andre Ward were to go to sleep like Rip Van Winkle and wake up in 5 years, I think he is so much more athletic, quicker, and technically more sound than Chavez. I think he beats him 12-0, and it would be a very boring one-sided fight.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, I think, you know, with Chavez, could he get close to him? That's what I kept thinking. Could he get him to the ropes? Would it matter? Would Ward be able to open up on him and try to get a stoppage? Would it mean anything? You know, what is Chavez Jr. at this point? He's got a great name. He's got some drawing power. We know he's going to be action. But he's not an elite fighter. He's a guy that you're hoping to make some entertaining TV with, which, I'll give him that. He's always fun to watch. It's just not the elite level that his father was. He's not as dedicated, but he sure is fun. I kind of agree with you. The Golovkin versus Chavez Jr., from just a purely entertainment point of view, is absolutely the fight to make.
You know, again, I respect Brian Vera. I like him personally, but I would venture to say if you really looked at the super middleweight rankings, well, your top 7 or 8 guys, if they fought Brian Vera, as a super middleweight, I think a lot of them would dominate him a lot more than Chavez did or stop him. Brian Vera is really, at this stage of his life, most likely a real middleweight. And the reason why they took this fight at 68 is because it's the most lucrative opportunity out there. And I think in their own minds they think to themselves, if this guy wasn't so lazy, Chavez himself could probably or should be at 160. So the Chavez Express rolls on. The question is, who does he face next? Gabe, Orlando Salido. Last week, we didn't exactly pick him, but I was rather insulted on behalf of Siri Salido, just how dismissed he was by everybody. Everyone bought the party line, and as you like to call it, groupthink, that Vasyl Lomachenko, this ultra-talented, accomplished amateur, was just going to dismiss and just absolutely ruin and just decapitate Orlando Salido. And you know what? No matter what you think of the decision, and there were other shenanigans that we'll talk about, I really think Vasyl Lomachenko got a lesson in what professional boxing is. And professional boxing, Gabe, is played by men.
Yeah, and it's not played. You know, it is like James Tony says, the one game you cannot play.
Mm-hmm.
It is the roughest sport there is. And really, I think top to bottom, it showed that this is the second fight for Vasyl Lomachenko. From the corner not really taking control of the referee and saying, whoa, you know, these are low blows happening. Get angry. Take control. Or tell your guy to go out there and start fouling and force the ref's hand to take control of the fight. Now, granted, it's Lawrence Cole. That's probably not going to happen. But at the same time, you know, there's so many things. I said this last week, and granted, I picked Lomachenko. I had a gut feeling about it. I was wrong. And he did stay in there and show some mettle. But the way they handled the weight, they didn't even Lomachenko's people didn't push for a next-day weigh-in. They didn't really seem to care. They just felt like their guy's going to get this title and beat this kind of shop-worn Mexican dude out of his belt. And they were wrong. And then all the gray areas of the fight, the way he was out-muscled, the way he was hit on the hips and negated, all of it was a really beautiful veteran performance. If that was Bernard Hopkins, we'd be calling it a masterclass. But it was Salido in Texas, and so people are crying about it. But the guy wanted it. You know, Lomachenko, this for me is the bottom line, and maybe two wrongs don't make a right. But when you decide that you're willing to bend the rules and bypass, and it was a voluntary defense, but you're in your second fight, but you want to go to the front of the line and fight the champ, and you can't complain about any of the things that go wrong along the way.
Gabe, I will disagree with you on that. I don't like the politics of it. I do think there's an unfairness to him jumping ahead of everybody. But as far as I'm concerned, once you're in that ring, I think you do have the right to at least have a fairly called fight and have the fight under fair circumstances. Let's go to this whole thing. Gabe, it was funny. When I talked to Sean Gibbons, who kind of is the manager or advisor to Salido after the weigh-in, Twitter blew up because Salido didn't make weight, something he hinted at to me a couple of days before in an interview we did. And I said to Sean, I said, Sean, what's the next day weigh-in? What's the cap? And he said, Steve, they didn't even want a cap. We could have weighed in at 140. They wouldn't have mattered. I mean, there was an absolute arrogance about Lomachenko and his camp. There was an absolute hubris that eventually was very costly. And Gabe, going to the early rounds of that fight, Lomachenko, I think, expected a slow, plodding Mexican. Now, Salido is not going to win any quickness contest. He's not what I'd call a quick twitch fighter, but Gabe, he's very crafty. And he has great upper body movement, great feints, knows how to shift from southpaw to right-handed in certain situations to offset someone's offense. He's also very crafty in terms of hiding that right hand. Then he digs to the body and below. We have to be honest about it. But the thing that I loved was that he always changed speeds. And it just goes to show you, a lesson for young fighters, you don't have to be fast necessarily to change speeds. And he never really gave him an open look. And the one thing that I love the way he tucks that chin in. Until that 12th round, he got buzzed by the left hand. He never was in the line of fire to get really rattled throughout the night. Gabe, the one thing that I noticed about Lomachenko, and this is, again, welcome to professional boxing, and this is why you probably need more fights before going through this stuff. Gabe, would it be hyperbole to say that Salido hit him with more body shots in maybe the first 5-6 rounds, hard ones, than maybe Lomachenko did in 397 amateur bouts?
Actually, you know, that's the thing. He shooed the transition period. And, you know, those WSB fights could be very brutal, but you are fighting top-level amateurs, maybe some gold medal winners even, or people that competed in that round. but they're still top-level amateurs. They're not crafty veteran pros. It's two different games in a sense. And Salido really, I think, showed the difference there, that there's a gray area missing. Even when they were fighting on the inside, Lomachenko wanted to hold a little bit more, especially after the body work was killing him, instead of learning out of kind of what he did in the later rounds, which is to get away from being locked up, let your hands free, and get to long range and just start unloading. Had he been more aggressive and turned, I think, even things like that, like the pros are more compact to me. You hit a guy, you turn quickly right off of him, and you hope to walk him into another shot. The amateurs are kind of about getting in and out and then kind of wider sweeping movements off to the side. And you see Lomachenko doing that throughout the fight, and then those last three rounds he starts to turn a little bit tighter and realize if I can stay a little bit closer, I can get off more punches. I think that's what kind of bodes well for his future, if he showed the ability to learn in a crisis situation in deeper waters than he'd ever been. And he closed the show much better than Salido did in some regards, hurting
well, Salido,
him right, almost getting him out of there.
Salido kind of reminded me of that old car with only a few drops of gasoline left that just barely pulled into that gas station in the middle of the desert. I mean, he was puttering at the end. One thing that I think Lomachenko found out, and maybe it was born out of necessity, or maybe it was because he was exploiting a very, very fatigued fighter. Gabe, I think he's much better as an initiator offensively than as a counterpuncher. He's got very quick hands, very athletic, great reflexes. And when he was trying to box, he wasn't necessarily boxing in the pocket. He was scampering away, and it looked like a lighter shade of Rigondeaux. But when he started to become the leader of the pack and said, I'm going to just go for broke here to a certain degree and force my quickness and my speed, I felt he was much more effective in that tack than he was the other way around. We're going to see how he boxes next. And, Gabe, it's interesting, according to Bob Arum, that the WBO may give him another vacant title shot. We'll see how the politics works out, because the mandatory at this point is Gary Russell, who is, again, promoted by Golden Boy. Gabe, we would be remiss, though, and all praise to Orlando Salido, a pro, who really put on a nice performance, but I think we have to be honest about it. There is an asterisk attached to this performance because he did not make weight. And again, I don't want to hear it's only a couple of pounds. Those last couple of pounds, when your body fat is less than 5-6%, that's very difficult. You can talk to any nutritionist, any person that's in the sports medicine field. Gabe, is it time for the networks to start writing into their contracts, since obviously the commissions and the promoters won't do it? Is it time for an HBO or a Showtime to say to guys like Salido, we don't care about the circumstances, but we are contracted for a featherweight fight. And if you can't give that to us, your money changes.
You know, I wonder about that. I mean, I do think the commission needs to look into it and find out the reasons for it. I'm curious because you're close to that camp. When people say, like, he didn't make any further effort to try to make the weight, is it essentially one of those things, he came downstairs having weighed himself already, like most people do, knowing that he wasn't going to make it, or did they just give up the night before? He seems to me like a professional guy that he probably tried,
yeah,
and at 33,
Gabe,
your body locks up.
Gabe, that's a good question. I talked to Sean Gibbons today, and Sean said the day of the weigh-in, a couple of hours before, they had all the curtains drawn, and he was laying down, and he flat out told Sean, I can't do anything more. That he was done. So it is what it is. But again, if Lomachenko is making that sacrifice, and again, I don't care who wins or loses here, what we should be trying to push for is a fair playing field. And every fighter will tell you, making weight is sometimes is more difficult than the actual fight. And if you look at Salido says, wait a minute, let's take a calculated gamble here. If they're only going to fine me $15,000, or in fact, that was a negotiated number, which seems absurdly low. And again, it speaks to the arrogance of the Lomachenko camp. He's saying to himself, if I win this fight, no one's going to care in 6 months. I'm going to have a victory over Lomachenko, and I'm probably going to get another big shot again. That's why I think that you got to have a more punitive system of penalties so that if guys know that they can't make the weight, don't sign the contract. And the networks themselves, I think, need to be more proactive because they are the ones putting up the money. And this is where feel bad for Lomachenko. He did not have a fair opportunity to fight a guy that weighed in at 126 pounds.
I agree with you. Now, I'm not sure what condition Salido was in for the 147 weigh-in. Was he wearing clothes? I kind of want to know more about that because seem to, you know, you can't say unofficial and then just hammer the guy all night long and say, well, this is how much he weighed. You have to have it one way or the other. It's an official scale, and he's wearing just underwear, and we get a real reading on the guy, or we don't. Each group needs to figure that out. I think, too, the sanctioning bodies need to take a look at this, because if Salido misses the weight, and all he can – now he moves up to 130, and he's talking, well, I want to fight the champions up there. He shouldn't be allowed to just get right to the front of the line because he held a belt that he lost on the scales at the last division, and then just hop up to the next one and be like, all right, I'm ready for a title shot. There mm-hmm. should be a penalty with a sanctioning body as well. I think the whole thing needs to be looked at, though. The weigh-ins, all of it, the way we're doing it, right, we think we're starting to abuse a system that was first put in place to actually be safety for, you know, to be safer for the fighters. And we're not doing that anymore, I don't think.
Okay, moving on to round two from the MGM Grand. We have a pay-per-view spectacular put on by Golden Boy and Showtime. Your main event, junior middleweights in action. Saul Canelo Alvarez returns against Alfred Angulo. Your undercard for the WBC featherweight title, Leo Santa Cruz defends against Christian Mahadas. For the IBF junior middleweight strap, Carlos Molina, always difficult, takes on the challenge of young Jermell Charlo. And then lightweights, this is in a late add to the card. Omar Figueroa had a hand injury. There are also rumors that, quite frankly, it was very heavy. He has been scratched from this bill. So now you have Jorge Linares taking on Nahito Arakawa. Gabe, I want to put you right on the spot. You are very close to Angulo, have been for a while. You're up there in that camp. Does he pull off the upset special?
Boy, you know, I keep looking at it. And, you know, I'm a little skewed, you know, because I'm close to Angulo, and I really believe in him. I don't think so. I lean towards that he loses a decision. Some of the training I've seen him do, I think he looks very good. He looks in great shape in the last sprint session I saw with him. I heard he had some nice green light days in terms of sparring and is looking very good. He didn't do the full board training. He did some of it, just like the work with Remy. He's not doing the new stuff that they're doing at the gym. So he's not doing the full, like, Victor Conte's Remy treatment, just the sprints. But even still, you know, I think he's going to look good the way he did with Lara, that kind of shape, if not better. What I've heard, he's in better shape than there. But he just gets hit so much. And there's one thing about Canelo, I don't think the power is so huge, but he is accurate. He uses the heavy jab really well. And he does land the right hand of the uppercut very well. And I think Angulo's open for both of those things because his head's too stationary. But we're going to find out a lot about Canelo in this fight. Can he handle pressure? Can he handle, you know, what's his beard like? Because I think Angulo is going to hit him harder than anybody ever has. And how well can he take it to the body? I think Angulo's got a great shot to win. I just have a feeling that he doesn't.
I worry about Angulo, like with Margarito. When you have an eye injury like the one he sustained against Lara, those things have a way of becoming a chronic problem. I've also said about Canelo Alvarez that to judge him against Floyd Mayweather is not fair. Most fighters are not in that realm, physically or technically. However, I think he's technically sound. I think he's fundamentally grounded. And I've always said he might be a little stiff and mechanical, but I think he has good functional quickness. I think he just is a little bit more versatile. I think he's going to find a way to win this fight, and he'll probably move on to bigger and better things. One last note here, and you guys can talk about this. Bring up any fight on the undercard at 347-215-7598. Gabe, Saturday, Abel Sanchez, the trainer of Golovkin and the managing director of K2 Promotions, which has really done a great job with Triple G, Tom Loeffler, they went to San Antonio to basically scout out Julio Cesar Chavez, and then basically announced the Andy Lee fight April 26th. Well, they got a call literally that afternoon from the manager of Golovkin, Oleg Herman, that Golovkin simply is now out of commission due to the unexpected death of his father. Gabe, I'll say this. That death was very unexpected, and in talking to Tom, it has hit the family very hard, and Golovkin is now the patriarch of that family. The two older brothers, I believe, died serving in the Kazakhstan Army. He will observe a 40-day mourning period, and as of right now, whether it's April 26th or July 12th, all plans are off for Gennady Golovkin.
Wow. That's, you know, I mean, just heart goes out to the guy. You know, lose your father like that, lose any family member like that unexpectedly. You know, what can you do? I think fight fans, you know, they're just going to have to step aside and deal with it. You know, it's a big blow. I imagine he doesn't, especially being the patriarch of his family, mm-hmm. doesn't want to lose that kind of money. But it's obviously a cultural thing, and it's just a respect thing. So it's a huge blow, you know. You think about it, like, not to take a shot at Andre Ward and all this, but if he wasn't in his litigation, there's an open date. I mean, there's fighters fight. You stop fighting with his promoter and get in the ring and take advantage of these things.
Absolutely. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's line them up. Who's next? Who's up on deck here?
In the 210, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
210, you're live.
Hi, it's Will Austin. How are you all?
Good. What's going
on,
Will?
Hey, how you doing? Hey, guys, I just wanted to ask, you know, y'all touched on that, you know, how Chavez now at 168, you know, he seems like one of these fighters, you know, that basically benefited from a big size advantage, and I just really don't see him competing with, I mean, do y'all consider him a top 10 super middleweight at all, you know, based on his two performances with Brian Vera pretty much?
I would say if he's top 10, he's probably in the very back half. Wouldn't you agree, Gabe?
Yeah, if he's going to be top 10, because he brings other intangibles. He draws, he brings ratings. He's got that lineage. Then, yeah, I mean, I guess you factor all that in, you put him at the bottom of the top 10. But I just don't see him as an elite fighter. I mean, he gets hit so much. And not to say Brian Vera is not a good fighter or anything, but I just kind of start matching him up against everybody in the division. I mean, I guess Carl Froch, who's kind of towards the end of it, would be an interesting matchup for him in a winnable fight. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a 160-pounder thinking that guy probably will have his way with Chavez Jr. a little bit. So, I don't consider him elite.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I was thinking, you know, that, like, even guys who were, like, you know, lower top 10 guys like Bamba, you know, Edwin Rodriguez, you know, Bika, Parabon, you know, I would kind of think those are, like, toss-up fights, you know, I don't know. This is the first fight I boycott, you know, even here in San Antonio and stuff, just because, you know, it's. I thought it was kind of a travesty that, you know, this guy gets an HBO date pretty much for a tune-up that he lost. He should have won in the first place. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, a guy gets two fights against Brian Vera on HBO, I mean, it's just, I mean.
I think your sentiments and your actions were echoed by a lot of people. I'll reiterate, when he fought Marco Antonio Rubio, he had nearly 15,000. This past weekend, he had about half that amount. And I believe that there is a loss of credibility with even the Mexican public. And I think that's the reason why Top Rank is willing right now to say, you know what, if you want to fight Gennady Golovkin, let's make that fight. Because if he was drawing the same amount of numbers as he was before, I just cannot imagine at that point that they would make this fight.
Exactly. And one quick question. You know, I watching on TV and stuff, I didn't, you know, it was what did he kind of mention? Okay, Golovkin's, you know, that incident happened with his father. You know, so he's out for 40 days. Are they going to still try to schedule him on June 17th, or are they going to kind of prolong it now?
Well, this is what I'm being told. First of all, HBO is going to explore the possibility of going on April 26th. Lou DiBella would like to do a show with Andy Lee against Matthew Macklin and then keep the fight between Willie Nelson and James Kirkland. My personal opinion is that's a fun doubleheader, and Lou told me I'd add a third fight. Doesn't even have to be mine, but let's give them a good night of entertainment. The plan was for Golovkin-Chavez to take place July 12th, and I'm hearing that the Forum in L.A. was right in play. But as of right now, Bob Arum is telling everybody, because Golovkin's status is so unknown and uncertain, that Chavez will probably have another fight July 12th on that date, and maybe the Golovkin-Chavez fight, should it come to fruition, would happen sometime in the fall.
Yeah, I hope so. It's kind of a shame, you know, because, like, as you mentioned several times, you know, Golovkin kind of wasted a lot of 2013, and I just kind of was hoping, you know, that he'd kind of, at least by mid-year, you know, he'd have that kind of a big marquee fight. You know, it's kind of very unfortunate that it happened, you know, that these incidents occurred. I mean, because, I mean, now we're going to, you know, he might end up, you know, wasting much of 2014, but, you know.
You know, Will, there's an old saying, guys, if you want to make God laugh, make plans. Will, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
If you want to call in, another phone line is open, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 215 here, not live on the next round.
Hello.
Yes, who is this?
Hello.
Chris from the City of Brotherly Love. Welcome.
Yes, sir. A long-time listener, first-time caller. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for listening.
Question. All right, guys. Just on a couple things with you guys quickly. First thing, we all know that Floyd Mayweather decided to go with Madonna on May 3rd. We all know he's very calculated in who he picks as his opponent. I think that the combination of foot speed and hand speed that Amir Khan has is the reason why he wasn't selected. We all know he's got a glass chin, but Floyd isn't a finisher. And I think that's the reason. I just wanted your thoughts on why he chose Madonna over Khan. I think Khan isn't the best fighter he would have fought, but styles make fights, and I think he would have given him a tough challenge. Just wanted
you
to
know,
on
you
that.
Are preaching to the choir here. Me and Mr. Montoya have been saying this, and I still blame Amir Khan for not acting like a fighter. I think he should have gone on with the Devin Alexander fight. That version of Devin Alexander, I thought December 7th, was imminently beatable, as Sean Porter showed. And Gabe, I know I saw some of your tweets this morning, and I know that you speak with Khan. Khan is in no position to believe anything Floyd Mayweather says as it relates to future opportunities, is he?
Yeah, no, not at all. He's not having it, you know. And we did an interview with him. I'm putting it up on Max Boxing tonight on Leaving in the Ring last Thursday. And, you know, Floyd's talking about next, and the only way Khan's going to be next is if Floyd decides to do a pay-per-view in a month other than September. Now, granted, Golden Boy could do the old bait and switch and move Canelo, who's supposed to be on three pay-per-views this year, to that September slot, considering he is Mexican after all. And Floyd could go later in the year. That is very much a possibility, and it could be Khan at that point. But it's so premature. We're barely even getting into the Maidana promotion, and Floyd's still torturing poor Khan. I think it's a little bit of back and forth, though. It's a little bit of, you know, top dog, underdog, in that Amir, I think he made Floyd mad in signing the contract back in December and saying, hey, I've signed my contract. Floyd wanted to be in control of it. Then we got all this poll business, and then kind of, and also, you know, Broner and Maidana, that happened, changed a lot of things. But I think this last thing, that when Khan put out his tweet, it basically broke the story before Floyd said that it was going to be Maidana. I think that still has got Floyd pissed. I think he's not happy about it. I think that's what today and this further game that's being played is all about. Khan,
right, I agree.
He was the one that broke the story.
Mr. Philly, I got to ask you this as a boxing fan. Are you buying Maidana Mayweather, given the fact that you think it is basically predetermined that Mayweather is just going to run circles around Marcos Maidana?
Honestly, I see it as being Mayweather, Baldemir, too. The only way I would buy that fight is if they put the what's in the air, the Amir Khan, Adrian Broner undercard on it. Showtime's done a good job with stacking their cards over the last couple of fights. I got to give them credit for that. So maybe if the undercard's going otherwise, I really don't care about that fight.
Okay, listen, is there anything else we could do for you?
Just one more quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
Guy Lomachenko, who Top Rank was grooming, obviously I think word on the street was they were grooming him to maybe be able to compete with the Rigondeaux in a year or two. Do you think what happened to him last Saturday was a lack of experience on his corner's part and his part, or just them being overly cocky? I think it was the first thing. I think they just didn't have the experience. He didn't know what to do when he got hit to the body. He didn't know how to clinch properly. He didn't. And to be this big, you know, I was going for the guy, so I was frustrated. I even started trolling, you know, Steve on Twitter after the fight, arguing with him a little bit, but
how could you?
Take on that.
You know, you really hurt my feelings when you did that. But seriously, here's my opinion. I think arrogance beat them. I really thought that they believed that Salido was so shot, so faded. And we said it last week. Salido is not the guy he was 2 years ago. I think there is physical slippage. But he's still a cagey veteran. And this is why no matter how talented you are, look at a guy like Guillermo Rigondeaux, who was every bit the amateur, if not better, than Lomachenko, right? He turned pro at age 29, but he didn't go for his first world title until about six or seven fights. So, and again, I really think that the management and the trainer, which is the father, I think that they really, really miscalculated or did not understand what they were really getting into.
Yeah, man, I was excited to see what he was going to bring to the table, and I was a little bit let down. So, but that's all I got, man.
All right, thank you very much. Please call in again.
Absolutely. Have a good one, guys.
And we'll take another call before we hit some tweets here. 347 215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
Hello, who is this?
Hey, how you doing?
Man, this is Carl, man.
Carl, where have you been, man? Stop being such a stranger. Jeez. Disappearing like Andre Ward up there in Oakland on us. Jeez.
There you go, man. I've been working, man. I've been working.
So, Carl, what
hey,
can so, we do? Oh, now, Carl, I got to ask you. Are you buying this week's pay-per-view?
Oh, man, I'm streaming that all day, man. I'm so broke, man.
Okay. Thanks for the honesty.
Yeah, I am broke, man. Hey, you know what? I was in a debate, man, with some coworkers, man. And you know, this is totally something different. But you know how the NBA they sent their players to the Olympics,
right?
Could they theoretically do that with the professional American boxers?
You know, in theory they could, but why would you want them to do that? I mean, amateur boxing, I know they're trying to make changes, Gabe, and I know you're much more knowledgeable than I am on this. I know that they're going to go to the old scoring system more or less. They're going to take away the headgear. But I mean, these are shortened fights, and if you're a professional, it's not like tennis. I mean, you have titles here, and you have championships to defend. And these guys are used to getting paid now. They're professional prize fighters, and I just don't see that. I don't see any type of dream team scenario as it relates to boxing, Carl.
I couldn't agree more. That and you know, there's a lot of blowback here. I mean, this was a unilateral decision, it seems, by AIBA, you know, the international amateur body that governs over boxing. And at the same time that they were saying, look, we want people more interested in the amateur system, then they created a pro promotional company and started signing people out of the Olympics. It was like, well, wait a minute. You know, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to get in the business of pro boxing, or are you trying to enhance the amateur system and get people to care about it more? Some reports I heard from the Nationals was that the attendance was down here in the U.S. because guys didn't want to come and risk with no headgear. They get cut. They get injured. That's what the program's for in that transition period. So you're seeing a little bit with the WSB and, you know, several years in now, you're starting to see the amateur system going, you know what, I don't think we really want this. This isn't better. It isn't safer. And you got kids, even at the elite level still, but they're taking damage that maybe they shouldn't. It's a strange experiment. So I don't know. Would you want to see a top-level pro step into the Olympics and beat up maybe a green kid? I wouldn't. I don't see it.
Well, man, I just remember with Teofilo Stevenson when he was 40 years old beating up 19-year-old kids for the United States just for a medal. I mean, I don't know, man. I wouldn't, man. It was just a question, man, that was floating around, man, at the job, man, you know.
Carl, you look at what happened this past weekend with Lomachenko, who may have been the greatest amateur of this past generation, get absolutely taken to school to a certain degree in the finer aspects of professional pugilism by a guy with 12 losses. And that, again, tells you the difference between professional boxing and amateur boxing. And I almost don't think it's fair for the U.S. to send a dream team against some of these other countries that don't have professional boxing. I mean, you thought the USA versus Angola was bad in basketball. in boxing, geez, that would just be downright bloody. Ugh.
Yeah, I guess so, man. You know, they may want to do it just for the medals, man. I don't know, man. But Gabe, I got one for you, man. We had a discussion about a fantasy junior middleweight match. Who do you got out of terrible Terry Norris and Tito? Who wins that?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I don't really do fantasy matchups, but that one is one of my favorites. You know, if I'm honest, I mean, it's kind of a who lands first kind of a situation. Because Tito looked pretty good. He looked pretty refreshed at 154. But he didn't take on somebody that was like Terry Norris, who's got one-stop shop, you know, power. Just boom, he lands and it's done. But he could also be had. That's a tough matchup. I kind of lean with Terry Norris, though. I think he's a little faster
really?
On the draw than Tito. But, yeah. I mean,
wow, Gabe.
A little bit inside.
Gabe, you surprised me. I'll say this. I think Terry Norris knocks down Trinidad, of course, in the second round. I think Trinidad gets dusted early, but I think he gets up, and as was his habit during his heyday, I think he could slowly wear down Terry Norris. I mean, the difference is both guys hit the deck a lot. One guy had much better recuperative powers, and that would be Tito Trinidad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what everybody thought, man.
All right, Carl, listen, thank you for joining us. Enjoy the stream or the radio feed this Saturday.
I will. I'll tell you all about it next Monday, man.
All right, thanks a lot. Gabe, let's get to a couple of tweets here. Here's one from Nathan Orr. Guys, where next for Loma? Does he step down or keep knocking on the world title door? Hearing he's a priority for the vacant WBO title. Gabe, if he fights Gary Russell, first of all, I think that's a very intriguing matchup. Would it be fair to say it would be Gary Russell finally stepping up and not the other way around?
It would, actually. I mean, that's what I was like, okay, I still have an issue with Lomachenko being like ranked number 5 by the WBO with one fight. But Gary Russell is like from one underserving guy to another. And I like Gary. I think he's got, you know, he's got it all except activity. He doesn't fight that often. And he's missing a bit of a resume. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Is he that talented that he just gets to bypass a career and go straight to the title shot? I don't understand it. But he's going to find out what's up. What is next for Lomachenko? I'm not really sure. I think they should really take the lesson, have 2 or 3 interim kind of fights. If you can get back in line fast for a title now that you're a cable fighter, so be it. But I think they would be they'd be very wise to take a few fights and get some wins, get some more rounds and some experience, and then go for a big name. You could end up squandering what could be a great career by rushing. I mean, he's not 50.
But
he's not even 30.
If you look at the mindset of that team with the manager, Igis Klimas, who once told me back at a media day before his pro debut in the fall, he said, if you can't fight today, you can't fight tomorrow. Now, I understand that sentiment, but, Gabe, I've seen athletes who are a lot better as juniors and seniors than they were as freshmen. That's why in football you redshirt players. That's why in baseball, even if you're Mike Trout or this great 5-tool player, they always say you need to get 500 at-bats in AAA. There is a process here. I know people hate to marinate stuff, but, again, Floyd Mayweather, who's this brilliant fighter, and I know he's a little bit younger in a different circumstance. He had 18 fights before he took on Chicanito. De La Hoya took on a very soft title belt, but he even went 12 fights. There's a reason why you do it this way. Gabe, here's one from hashtag MFP. What do you think about a possible Amir Khan versus Danny Garcia fight in late May, early June at 147, winner gets Mayweather? I think it's an interesting scenario, but, Gabe, I have to be honest. Danny Garcia still has not had any stated intentions to actually move up from 140 as of yet.
No, he's enjoying being the man at 140. And what's strange about him is he's just kind of seemed to disappear. I mean, I know he's fighting next week, but he's like the least hyped guy that's really a true winner over there, a true champion. I don't really understand it. That's an interesting fight. I just don't know if that storyline works. I mean, I know Khan's trying to build credibility, so maybe it works for him. But for Garcia, I think he's kind of want to be treated a little bit more like an A-side. And as much as he was able to come out victorious in that fight, Khan is still not a great matchup for him. And then you move it 7 pounds north of where he got that one, but got that win. And there could be some issues there as well for him, some trepidation. So yeah, I think it's good for us. I'm not sure how great it is for Danny Garcia.
Here's one from JJ. What are y'all predictions for the pay-per-view buys for the Canelo fight? What number would make it a success? Gabe, I've talked to people. Anything above 325 to 350, and I think you're going to see Canelo on pay-per-view all the time. My guess is it'll probably do right around 300 to 350.
Yeah, I'm sticking 350. That sounds like a reasonable number. I think it's makeable. I'd be very impressed if he got to 450, somewhere in there. But this is a good fight. I think everybody really wants to see it. It's a decent undercard. There's people there that we want to see. I wanted to see, dude that got pulled, but I'm curious more. I want to hear more about the weight issues and if that was true. But at least he spared us the whole drama of not making weight. But overall, I think it's a good card, and it's a solid offering for pay-per-view. I wish it was cheaper, but it is what it is.
I'm actually doing a story on it tomorrow. I think it's a pretty good pay-per-view. I think it would have been an excellent Showtime card. Here's one from ASFD. Are there a lot of boxing journalists that bet on the fights, and is that okay with you? I know the old-school guard used to bet and used to do it often. I personally don't because, really, I have no discretionary income. And whether that's okay with you, you know what? I live and let live. I don't give a damn. I mind my own business.
Yeah, I mean, it's your money. You want to set it on fire or you want to double it, whatever you want to do, by all means. I have plenty of betting people that ask me questions, who do you like, this and that. I don't try to share anything that the general public, that I wouldn't share with the general public. I don't do betting anymore. I used to before I was a writer, but I find like I second-guess myself a lot more than anything now that I'm a writer and have more information. So I don't bet anymore, but like you, I live and let live.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, before we move on, I think it was a very strong, solid performance from Terrence Crawford, really beating Ricky Burns to a point where they couldn't even rob him in Scotland. God, I think Terrence Crawford, if he understands one thing, boxing is great, but you got to be able to layer your performances for your own good in terms of marketability. I think Terrence Crawford is ready here to have a very long, productive run at 135.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's good. You know, I would like to see some more excitement, you know, with him, some more risk taking. But what I liked from him in this fight, I think the things that he did well that will lead to action fights is that every time Burns had success, Crawford jumped all over him and let his hands go and got right in there and let him know that it was a fight that he was going to win, not Ricky Burns. He never let him get into a rhythm, never let him get confidence, really. It just kind of kept at him. It wasn't the most scintillating performance on the planet, but I don't think that's necessarily Crawford's, you know, nature. He's a boxer. There's a reason why he has become a very, very good boxer. But I agree with you. I don't see anybody at 135 that's going to challenge him. I mean, I think there's some good fights for him, but I don't necessarily think that he's in danger of losing anytime soon. He's the real deal.
And here's a tweet that has something to do with that fight. Guys, more biased commentating. HBO, the Ricky Burns fanboy, doing commentary in England.
I think HBO was just kind of bizarre.
Oh, they were selling Lomachenko, weren't they, Gabe? Oh,
they really were. I mean, it was like I expected them to kind of cut to the announcing crew, and they were wearing Lomachenko T-shirts. You know, it was kind of brutal. But I mean, at the same time, it's, you know, it's kind of like the joke I like to make is that, you know, complaining about HBO's commentary on some level is like going to Denny's and complaining about the food. You know what you're going to get. I mean, Jim likes to sell their house guys. He does like to take up for the bad parts of the business in terms of exposing, you know, the weight that Toledo missed. He does take umbrage with things like that. But then, you know, Max is going to compare this guy to some old-time fighter. They're just all over the place. And please, note to HBO, please, no one tell Roy Jones that he is an expert or we're going to get another, you know, the elbow monologues. Like, he just went on and on about it. The guy went on about body shots like he was some sort of body-punching master despite the Virgil Hill win. It was a very strange broadcast night, I thought, for HBO. And the British guys, you know, they're always just going to be biased towards their guy. It's just the way it is. I didn't see that fight as close at all. Did you with Crawford?
No, I thought the first four rounds were very competitive. And I said, boy, I hope Crawford decides to step it up a little bit offensively or he's going to live with a lot of regret. And to his credit, the last two-thirds of the fight, he separated himself. He really showed a lot of class. Now, as for the HBO broadcast, thank God for Harold Lederman because they were all in on Lomachenko. And, you know, I had a very spirited yet friendly debate over their call with Jim Lampley earlier. And he did not see it that way, obviously. But I just really thought, in listening to Max, who I'm very friendly with, that you close your eyes, you think you're looking at Pale Whitaker as it related to Lomachenko. And I thought he just looked like a very green but talented amateur. That's my problem. But, again, it is what it is. They wanted Lomachenko because there's much more upside than with the 33-year-old Mexican who already had a dozen losses. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
All right, and the 267, you're live.
This is the line
round.
I was telling you last night.
267?
But it was still green, so then I kind of...
Okay, let's cut this guy off, Gabe.
Yeah,
off
I
him.
Can't hear that story.
They're not even paying attention to our show. Get them out of here.
323, you're live on the next round.
Hello? And get rid of them, too. Just drop them.
All right. You got it. In the 909, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Hugo from Fontana, California.
Hugo, welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to pile on what you guys saying about HBO. I'm usually not. I hate it when people say, "Oh, well, they're biased to this side." You know, they usually are, but I think this time they took it to a whole new level. I mean, we're talking about service, how it all.
I believe we lost Hugo there, Gabe.
Yeah, I think we did. He actually dropped.
Hugo, call us back. You know the number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, we have any other callers on the line?
We do. In the 702, you're live on the next round. 702, you're live on the next round. Vegas for the knockdown.
We crapped out there.
We did. Let me try in the 347. You're live on the next round.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from NYC.
Rich, how are you?
Hey,
welcome aboard.
I'm hating on both of you guys because you're probably walking around in sandals and I'm freezing my ass off right now.
Well, hold on. I just want to know that, you know, one thing. I am wearing sandals, but I do have sweatpants on, for my defense.
Listen, I have a question, man. Is Ruslan Mike Alvarado going to happen? I mean, not Ruslan, Wanda?
I believe so. Rich, let me get to that real fast. Lance Pugmire has been keeping in touch, calling people like Fernando Beltran and Bob Arum. According to his tweets, things are looking good. And in talking to some of the people at Top Rank last week about it, that's the fight they want to reopen the Great Western or Fabulous Forum, because the storyline is natural. Marquez originally came up under the Forum Boxing banner. I believe that that fight will happen May 17th, yes.
All right, cool. Is that an official duck of Ruslan? Because one I kept talking about, Ruslan's a stepping stone. I'm a stepping stone, this and that.
You raise an interesting point, Gabe. It's funny to me that when fighters reach a certain age, whether it's Sergio Martinez now or Bernard Hopkins and I guess Marquez, why do these guys get a pass on taking tough fights? I don't understand it. If you're fighting for the money and you decide to be in the game, and especially if you have a title, isn't that the way it works, that the old lion gives it up to the newer generation?
I think the game's changed. You know, I think when Oscar went rogue and decided to open his own company and it became successful, he decided he was going to have partners. I think Floyd, in the way that he's taking control of his career, buying it out, but not really actually signing with someone else, but just kind of being a free agent and being successful at it. Cotto's done the same thing. I think the game has changed a little bit. Why fans don't kind of dog those guys out, I don't know. But the game is just such a free-for-all anyways. It would be hard to get mad at them for kind of cashing out of the business that generally cashes them out. I think that Ruslan's not a stepping stone at all. I think he's a hard fight. I think that's what Marquez should say, as opposed to kind of denigrating the guy without giving him a chance to punch him back in the mouth and show him different.
No, but Rich makes a great point, though. There is a hypocrisy to what Marquez is saying. You can't call the guy that knocked out the guy that you're going to face a stepping stone. There's not a lot of transparency in that particular statement.
No, not at all.
All right. All right, thanks a lot, fellas.
All right, Rich, thank you for the call.
All right, no problem, man. Talk to you soon.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next online here?
In the 909. He's back with us. Hugo.
Hugo, what's going on?
Yes.
You have better reception this time?
I hope so. Certainly.
Okay,
so.
Go ahead, Hugo. The stage is yours.
I just wanted to pile on off to what, everybody's talking about, the HBO commentating. You can't my point with this is that you can't have it both ways. You can't say that it was all the extra weight that Salido had that helped them, dominate, the first half of the fight. And then you can't say, the storyline going in that he was going to be too tired and then he was going to get knocked out at the end. You can't have it both ways. You're making excuses for Lomachenko losing while he was getting, taken apart, the first 6-7 rounds with hard body shots. In fact, there was, I believe, about the 9th or the 10th round where Salido hit him so hard to the body, it looks like he was about to go down.
Hugo, you bring an interesting point, and Gabe, we've done stories on this, and I've talked to people, and you've talked to strength and conditioning coaches. Just because a guy doesn't make weight and then puts on a lot of weight after, that doesn't give them any particular advantage. In fact, most of those guys are completely ill-equipped to actually go through a 12-round fight.
Well, and here's the other thing. I mean, I think that if you would have made the weight, would we be talking about it differently? Would it have changed the whole storyline? Would they have kept harping on how much he weighed the night of the fight? Or would they have said, well, it's unofficial, he could have been wearing clothes? Would it have been as big of a deal? I mean, how many guys are two weight classes above? I mean, Chavez Jr. is a classic example of that. His last fight, they had to move the actual weight of the fight because he couldn't make the weight. I don't see them really savaging him the same way. That's the thing that I have a problem with HBO is the scale just slides all over the place, even within the same broadcast. The lack of consistency kind of kills your credibility.
By the way, guys, I talked to someone in the sport who flat out told me today, I don't ever want my guys weighed by HBO unofficially the day of the fight because it dominates the storyline, and we don't have to do it. That simple.
Okay. One last thing, guys, regarding, and I apologize if I interrupted.
No, please go ahead.
Regarding Stevenson signing with Heyman, I think it's great business, and as much as I want to see Kovalev, Stevenson, wouldn't it make more sense to have Stevenson, Bernard Hopkins? You're going to make just as much money and maybe an easier fight.
From his standpoint, yes. From our standpoint, no. And I don't get a piece of Stevenson's money. So I'd rather see what pleases me.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I've always said this. Al Heyman is great for his clients. I don't know if he's great for boxing or its fans. And I'm getting a little concerned, Gabe, and I'll tell you why. The Cedric Agnew-Kovalev fight was part of a plan where we're going to green-light this really green guy for Kovalev, and we're going to let Fanfaro be green-lighted for Stevenson because eventually, hopefully, it'll be Stevenson-Kovalev sometime in mid-September. Gabe, we heard about 2 weeks ago that Fanfaro-Stevenson was going to be announced. Then the news dropped of Al Heyman, who, by the way, signed Louis Collazo earlier today. Gabe, what is taking so long with the Stevenson Fanfara announcement?
Yeah, I think it's going to be something else. I mean, I think Al—that's not in Al's plan. Like you said, I think he said it perfectly. He's good for his clients, not so great for the sport. We don't always get to see the fights that we want to, but it is what it is. I mean, how soon do you think Stevenson stays with HBO? I mean, how long is that contract? What's that relationship like? Does he have loyalty to the network, or is he going to join the cavalcade of stars over at Showtime? Louis Colazzo signing up. I mean, it is just what De La Hoya described. You know, we're going to sign all the talent. We want everybody under our roof, and we are going to throw a bunch of pay-per-views at you. And here we're seeing it this year, plan in action.
Hugo, we appreciate the call.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Appreciate
and
it.
Gabe, our guy 702 is Mr. Robert Palmer, says he's back on the line. Let's punch him up.
All right. 702, you are live on the next round.
Hello?
702.
All right, put him back on hold. Right. Obviously, he's not ready. By the way, other news. This is, I think, a very significant pickup for HBO in their fall or summer-spring schedule. May 31st, Frotch Groves will be on HBO. Gabe, thumbs up to that.
I love the fight. I love that Frotch decided that he needed to right this wrong. I don't think he could have moved forward. I mean, he could have. I'm sure there's a million reasons why he could have gone in a different direction, maybe even the Chavez Jr. But to do this fight, it speaks volumes about the guy. It kind of reinforces everything I feel about Carl Frotch, and he is kind of a man's man and a man of his word. He's a cocky dude. He does talk a bit in the press, but when push comes to shove, he makes fights, and he makes the fights that we want to see. It's going to be a great fight. I haven't made my pick on it yet, but I'm really excited about it because it's that kind of fight. I'm not sure who's going to win.
I read the interview. They each asked Frotch and Groves the same questions, and they just did a Q&A format. These guys are the UK version of Barrera Morales. I don't mean in caliber of fights or historically. These guys don't like each other. I mean, honestly, they detest each other. And you know what? That's great. And I agree with you, Gabe. In judging by the Twitter reaction of when maybe he was going to go fight Chavez with bypassing Groves, there was a huge blowback. as it related to the reaction, they're like, wait a minute, Buster. Wait one cotton-picking moment here. You got some unfinished business here. And I'm reading reports, Gabe, this thing could be at Wembley Stadium, and they're talking about 60, 70, 80,000 people. I don't know if it's the best fight in the world, but you could literally argue that May 31st, if that comes to fruition, that might be the event of the year in the sport of boxing.
Oh, it's going to be huge. You know, it's a real fight. It's going to be a gigantic fight. It's going to be an event. The atmosphere there is going to be absolutely incredible. I think Cotto Martinez is going to be a hell of an event itself. The atmosphere is going to be electric. I'm looking into going to that fight. But this fight itself right here, it's like you said, it's a lazy narrative when you say that the sport is dead. There's still competitive fights to be made. There's still big events to be made. And on a scale that MMA or UFC itself, you know, couldn't really match. I just think it's a great fight. And I hope it lives up to the hype. Sometimes the rematches can be a bit of a letdown, but there's something about the way they talk to each other, the way they talk about each other. I just don't see this one going the distance.
347-215-7598 is your number. If you want to tweet at us, at SteveMaxBoxing, at Gabriel_Montoya, at Max Boxing Live. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 702. You're live on the 702.
How's it going?
Is this Robert Palmer?
That's me, indeed.
Robert, you're a wanted man. Speak, I say.
Sorry about that, guys. I just wanted to give my thoughts on where I want the guys who fought this weekend to go next. Starting with Crawford, I'd love to see Beltran get his shot at the title. He probably deserved the shot at Burns the rematch before anyone else. I would imagine HBO would probably pick that fight up. And then maybe see Crawford take on the Gambo against Garcia winner. That would be a good fight. I mean, Burns could probably take on any of the domestic lightweights, but I still think maybe the Figueroa Alvarez winner would be, if he would travel over to the US, that would be an interesting fight to see. You know, Burns isn't the best fighter in the world, but he's really in a dull fight. And he'd probably make those guys look good because he takes a lot of punches and he's a former world champion, a good name on the record.
Robert, let's go one by one on some of the things that you said. Bob Arum has gone on the record with me and other reporters that if Ray Beltran wins on April 12th against Rocky Martinez, and I do expect him to come out victorious, I think he's the more natural lightweight, he believes that Beltran should get a shot at Terrence Crawford. But Arum has also said that Terrence Crawford's first title defense might be in Nebraska. Not so sure that Beltran would want to fight him in that particular setting. As for Gamboa Garcia, let's make that fight first. I'm going to be very cynical about this, Gabe. I don't know how you feel. I don't trust Gamboa to sign his name on the dotted line and actually show up for that type of fight, Gabe, just based on pure track record.
I trust Floyd Mayweather to fight Amir Khan next more than I trust that fight getting made. You know? I just don't trust Gamboa. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he just doesn't even seem like he's fighting anymore. He does more fighting on Twitter than he actually does in the ring. So, yeah, we'll see. But I don't get a real strong feeling that fight's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like Salido's going to almost definitely be going up to super featherweight. I think it'd be great to see one of the two Japanese champions come over. And Salido would be a real sort of acid test for those guys coming over. I mean, if Uchiyama could come in and even stop a fight like Salido, that would really make the Garcia fight a big deal, get a lot of people taking notice. Because Uchiyama, I'd say, is the best fighter in the division, even with Garcia there. But he hasn't been on HBO or Showtime, so people really don't know much about him.
Robert, the sense that I get is that certain Japanese guys are willing to travel, like Arakawa, Aki Shimoda a couple years ago fought on HBO against Rico Ramos. But the truly elite guys, like Uchiyama, they're pretty safely ensconced there in Japan. And I get the sense that unless Salido's willing to travel to the land of the rising sun, I don't think that matchup is really all that realistic.
Yeah, sometimes the trip to the U.S. can almost be the retirement fund for some of these Japanese fighters, I think. They're almost coming to cash out. And sometimes they get lucky, like I can't remember his name, the guy got with Kirkland with the first round KO. I was actually at that fight.
Ishida.
And you're also the guy that fought Donaire about 2 years ago with people walking out at the StubHub Center after Rios Alvarado. Remember that game when Nonito Donaire basically became the walkout bout on his own card?
Yeah. But it's apparently just absolutely brutal. But apparently Regan does the boring ones. But there you go. I think I'd like to see Lomachenko go down to super bantamweight. Maybe, or at the very least, just kind of build a resume, maybe get 4 or 5 fights in before this time next year and then start to build up that traction again. It'd be interesting to just see how big his kind of market, his whole marketability was based on the elite amateur that stepped up straight away. So it'd be interesting to see if Top Rank even can be bothered to rebuild him at this stage, because I'm sure he's got a decent minimum guarantee as well.
Robert, I'm just going to make this point very clear. Fighters that are rebuilt have to have managements that are willing to go along with the plan. And if it was up to Top Rank, they would have waited a little bit. I mean, honestly, no matter who Lomachenko was going to sign with coming out of the amateurs, they made it very clear, we are not going 10, 15 fights. We're not even going to go 6 or 7. And if there's already talk that the WBO is willing to give him a vacant title shot, guess what, Robert? That's exactly where they're going.
Yeah, and it's probably worked out pretty well for old Gary Russell Jr. that he's going to get himself a nice vacant title after all.
So, Robert, how excited are you that the U.S. Network picked up Frotch Groves?
I'm happy, but I'm probably going to, because I've got a Chromecast, so I'll probably stream the UK commentary, because even though the UK commentary isn't great, I still think it's better than HBO. I know you guys were giving the UK commentary some shit for being a bit biased, but I mean, if you look back, Jim Watt, who's the sort of main guy who does the scoring there, he did score Valuev Hay to Valuev, he scored Sturm Macklin to Sturm, and he scored Gil Barker to Gil, and they're all fights that the majority of people would have given to the British fighter, and he gave them to the away fighter. So he's not always that bad, although he was pretty bad on Saturday. It's not really about the biasness for me. It's more about the atmosphere. I just feel like HBO suck the fun out of the fight sometimes with too much emphasis on CompuBox and stats, and just tell me what's going on in the fight, and I can watch it. That's all I want to see, and flash the CompuBox numbers up at the end of a round. I don't need Jim Lampley talking about it for 2.5 minutes.
I don't need CompuBox numbers. I couldn't agree with you more. I was watching the fights, and I was like, boy, this is really cerebral. We're sitting here talking about their foot placement and Max Kellerman going, and it's only like a round or so in, and he's talking about the brilliant footwork of Lomachenko, and, you know, when you're a southpaw, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know, there's a fight going on in front of you, and things are happening in it. Why don't you just shut up and have somebody describe that and just be quiet?
Because
I'm not a Max guy. You know, I'm sure he's a nice person and everything, but you know, I don't have no relationship outside of listening
Robert,
to him. Yo,
Robert,
it's just
do
annoying.
What is your opinion of the HBO broadcast crew post Larry Merchant?
Well, you know, I liked when I look back on classic fights. I liked Larry Merchant. I didn't like him in the sort of last couple of years. Max Kellerman can be good. He can be bad. Andre Ward, terrible. I don't think actors should ever be on the commentary, especially if they're commentating on a fight that they could be against.
Mm-hmm.
I could only imagine if Ward was commentating on the Chavez fight, he would have been bigging up Chavez the whole way through.
He did that in September, Robert.
Exactly.
And
I mean, I'd love to see Chavez Jr. in a fight with any of the super middleweights, apart from Andre Ward, to be honest. I think a fight with Abraham now would be fun. A fight with Beaker, I know that probably won't happen, but that would be fun. And the Frotch Groves winner. I think Frotch, although I slightly favor him in the Groves rematch, I actually think Frotch would be the easier fight for Chavez. I think Groves' speed would probably cause a lot of problems.
I agree. I think
Chavez
that Groves' quick front side with that flashing, flicking jab and that fast right hand and his movement, I think would really trouble him. And again, Frotch could beat Groves 10 out of 10 times, but again, we've seen this in boxing. Groves might actually be a tougher matchup for Chavez stylistically.
Yeah, and I agree. And the last one I'd want to see, I think Vera against Curtis Stevens would be a really good little fight on HBO. Pick that on a pay-per-view undercard or put it on a Boxing After Dark show. I think that would be a fun fight.
Mm. Robert, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
And don't forget, we're on every Monday here at 4 o'clock. Don't forget, Robert. You disappointed us there. Jeez.
Sounds good. Okay, buddy. Well,
if you want to call in, our favorite guy from the UK in the LV, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 951, you're live on the next round. 951? Going once, going twice. Just listening. In the 954, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, yo, what's going on, guys?
Is this the Gator?
You got it right.
No, what's going on, Sean? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just finished moving to a new apartment, so busy. So, anyway, guys, I wanted to talk Nevada. What's the whole deal with this whole revoking the whole testosterone replacement therapy thing? I mean, I'd like to think that it was for other reasons, but I have a feeling it's all political, you know.
Gabe,
well, I think Dan Henderson said it best. He's an MMA fighter, and MMA's really seem to really react to it. Boxing writers have kind of covered it, but they kind of stay away from the whole PED thing. But Dan Henderson said, you know, they took the easy way out. What they should do, he said, I would love for them to do better random, no advance notice drug testing. Instead of trying to get rid of the bigger problems of PEDs, they banned the drugs they'd already approved for athletes with chronically low testosterone levels. And to kind of translate that, what Nevada did in banning, you know, therapeutic use exemptions for testosterone replacement therapy was the right thing to do, but it was a Pandora's box they opened. So for them to bathe themselves in some glory for an epidemic they created is kind of silly. Brazil is now following suit. The UFC says they're going to do it. A lot of the fighters, I'm writing a piece on it, across the board in MMA, there's a ton of guys saying, one was very happy to see TRT banned. Absolutely a ridiculous idea to start with, and a major factor in my personal retirement from fighting. That was Brian Stan. It's the right thing to do, but at the same time, I think you're kind of pushing the drug users back into the dark because they still have the 6-to-1 TE ratio, which is 50% greater than the WADA standard. So it's a big truck, a big hole you could drive a truck through, and that truck could be full of guys using testosterone. Nobody's going to catch it because they don't do TIR testing. They do the TE ratio. And we test on the night of. So it's like, yay, we stopped doing this horrible thing that we were doing. Okay.
That's exactly how I felt, Gabe. I mean, they took the easy way out. I mean, the real problem is not the TRT. It's the fact that they don't test adequately for it, you know, or at least increased testing would have weeded that out, I feel like, a lot more.
Right.
But I'm a pretty big MMA fan, so I'm pretty up to date on everything that's going on. I just find it really funny that I read the Outside the Lines piece. I forget the guy's name, but it was a really good story. And
Mike Fish.
I found it really funny that no boxers were granted one in 2013 in Nevada, but there was like what 10 or 11 MMA fighters.
Yeah, it was very strange. I mean, well, boxing I think is always kind of a little bit behind, and I think they were behind on this. But I think either that or well, boxing's ahead in cheating, and the guys are like, why should I ask for something? Look at the way the tests are. I can just get right around it without ever anybody knowing that I'm on TRT. I think that actually might be more the case. Remember when the Lamont Peterson story broke and he had gone to an age clinic, which a lot of these guys are going to eat in MMA, one of the sources said that there was probably somewhere between, I think it was like 50 and 100 or 20 and 50, I have to look at my notes, fighters that were going through just that clinic alone. So I think it's still a problem, and they're not doing the random testing the way they should. And even this claim of them doing biopassport in Nevada, that's a bunch of BS. They're not testing anybody long enough to be doing biopassport. At least 6 months to 2 years of a full sample collection of one guy in order to get a basic reading to do it. So they're still light years behind. That's why I think the real work has begun. They've actually kind of pushed an important issue into the darkness as opposed to upgrading their testing and bringing the cheaters to light.
Right. And guys, I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the show, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating old news here. But what's the deal with this Broner-Khan fight? For me, I think that's probably the worst fight Broner could take right now. You know what I mean?
Sean, I don't disagree with you.
Is that a legit possibility? Because if Paulie can box Broner's ass off, I don't even want to know what Khan can do. You know, the speed is just completely different levels, and I don't think he'd be able to walk. He's not going to be able to walk Khan down in the same way he did Paulie.
You know, Sean, as flawed as Amir Khan is, he's also very gifted in a lot of ways. Foot speed, length, quickness. And with the way Broner plants his feet, and he needs you to kind of be inside the pocket a little bit, I think that's a stylistic nightmare for Adrian Broner.
Yeah, why is Big Brother pushing it so hard on Twitter? I find that kind of funny. You know what I mean? Big Brother, Little Brother, you would think you would want to look out just a touch more.
I just find it interesting that Amir Khan is being instructed by Floyd Mayweather that if you beat my little brother, then you could fight me. Guys, isn't he turning Adrian Broner now into Andre Berto?
Ouch.
Yeah, essentially. He's kind of the new Berto. I mean, it's like, all right, you got to beat this guy. And what's interesting, though, is if Broner wins, what does he get? He probably doesn't get Floyd.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of making Amir go through hoops. I think that's all it really is he likes upsetting Amir. Amir kind of retorts, plays into it, and it just goes back and forth. He may have some sort of inkling of who he's going to fight next, but really, I mean, look at the fact that we thought Khan was going to get it, and Maidana ends up getting it. Floyd, I think, is an impulsive guy and decides what he wants as the landscape changes. It's a long way to September.
Yeah, guys, and I'll just leave you with this. I've noticed that, you know, with this whole Khan Mayweather thing, with the whole saga that's been going on, I don't understand all this criticism that's been coming Khan's way. Like, for me, as a diehard boxing fan, Khan is the antithesis of the type of fighters I love to watch. He's supremely talented, but he's got those fatal flaws where you know he could always drop the ball and lose. And to be honest, that's why I watch boxing, for the excitement. Like, when he fought Danny Garcia, all my friends went out that night. I stayed home to watch it, and like it was amazing. You know, when Danny caught him with that left, and I just think like if every fighter was like Floyd, I wouldn't be a boxing fan, plain and simple. If every fighter was like Rigondeaux, I probably wouldn't be a boxing fan, even though I appreciate it a lot and I enjoy
Sean,
it.
Sean, there may not be a boxing business to be a fan of if that were the case.
Hey, unless you bring them to Miami, and me and all my Cubano homeboys go out there to a fight.
So, Sean, right, yay or nay on the pay-per-view this weekend? You forking out your hard-earned money?
Yeah, I think me and a friend of mine are going to do it. I think it's a good card, honestly. And the closer and closer it gets, I don't know if it's just the marketing that gets me every time. But I feel like Canelo-Angulo is going to be a good fight. You know, Canelo is going to be a good fight. But, guys, I want to bring up one more thing. The Chavez-Vera fight, I thought Chavez did great, but the first couple rounds, what the hell is he doing trying to box from range? He looked terrible trying to fight from range. Once he got on the inside and made it ugly like his pops did, he's great. He's a great inside fighter. It's surprising because he's so lanky. But I just think if he were to fight on the inside and just go shoulder to shoulder phone booth style, he's got a chance against a lot of super middleweights.
I'm not sure. I'll have to disagree because remember, as much as we respect Brian Vera for his toughness, he's really a 54-60-pounder. Just remember that.
I really believe that
if he faced a real super middleweight, I don't think those physical advantages would be nearly as prevalent.
Do you think Golovkin knocks him out or beats him if they fight?
I think Golovkin beats him like a pinata on an East L.A. birthday party. The only thing missing would be the candy coming out.
So that's a good line at the sports book to look ahead to, because Chavez's name will bring a lot of undue favoritism in the betting lines. You know what I mean?
No, that's the way you do it. Sean, anything else?
No, guys, keep it real. Good talking to you. Have a good week.
All right, thank you, Sean. If you want to call in, got a few more minutes left, about 12 minutes left on the next round. On the Leave It in the Ring radio network, this is Steve Kim with Golden Gate Gabe Montoya from the city of San Francisco. Our number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, anyone else next?
Yes, and don't count Chavez Jr. out. Candy might, in fact, come out of him. In the 111, you're live on the next round. Skype number
some sort of hidden block number. You're live on the next round. Nope. All right. Starting to get to be slim pickings here. Let's see. In the 787, you're live on the next round. 787.
Hi, guys.
Oh,
doing?
My God. Now, this is the most distinctive voice in all of radio and blog talk. Javier, what's
it's
going
very
on?
Very true.
Guys, one question, a couple of questions. First of all, with HBO picking Frosch and Groves on May 31, did they just say to hell with Nonita the Nerf fight on that day in Singapore?
Javier, I was told by somebody that they may actually just do that broadcast. It may be actually part of a big day of boxing. So I wouldn't count that out yet. I wouldn't pencil it in, but I wouldn't count it out either. I'm going to find out more in the next few days.
Also, are you guys surprised they are not mentioning Hal Lundy for a shot at Prodonikov? I keep hearing Algieri, maybe Mayfield or Dudorme, and maybe even DeMarco, but I think Hal Lundy deserves the shot a lot more than the other guys. I know Dudorme or Mayfield, one of them is going to win on April 29, but I believe Hal Lundy will be a better opponent at this point for Prodonikov.
Javier, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think a lot of politics went into getting that Dudorme-Mayfield fight on HBO, okay? I'm going to delve into that a little bit more. Gabe, I don't know if you agree with me. That's one of the ugliest matchups possibly on paper of HBO's schedule, I think, in a couple of years. I've just seen Kareem Mayfield, and he's like a lesser talented version of Andre Ward.
It's, yeah, politics, maybe a couple of lost bets. I'm not sure. You know, somebody lost at golf or something. That's how that fight ended up on cable. I have no idea. Yeah, I think it's as ugly on paper. I'd like to see Hank Lundy in with Pravodnikov. I think you're right on the money, Javier. He's an exciting guy. He brings it every time. He brings some speed and power and experience that I think will make for a fun little test for Pravodnikov. I think Pravodnikov wins, but it's the kind of fight that if it is a mental letdown fighting a guy that's not on the level of the guys that he just faced in a row, he could have some problems some nights. And I think, too, with Pravodnikov, he's got that skin that could be a problem. He swells up, he cuts. So every time he goes in the ring, he's going to have some issues, particularly with that aggressive style. It's a really good fight.
And one last thing, guys. The last time there was a big fight here in Puerto Rico, they bring Solito here because they thought Juanma was going to beat him, and we all know what happened. Do you think there is any chance that something like that can happen to Garcia with the Herrera fight? He make a very interesting fight with Alvarado, and also, even though he lost, he beat Prodonikov and also gave a good fight against Kareem Mayfield.
Javier, I think Herrera is a very solid professional fighter, but I think there's a difference, though. Coming into those two fights, Juanma Lopez, before Solito, was showing signs of real vulnerability, going back to the Rogers-Matagua fight. In fact, his lifestyle wasn't very disciplined. I don't get the sense at all in terms of that regard with Danny Garcia. I mean, the one thing Danny Garcia does, shows up preparing to win, and that's a real pro. I know there's a lot of zaniness with the father, the gaudy T-shirts and the jewelry, but when it's all said and done, Danny Garcia conducts himself like a pro for the most part, although the first Zab Judah postponement, there were some theories going around. But again, Gabe, I don't sense the vulnerability that I did with Juanma a couple of years ago.
No, I think Danny, he hasn't lost it on the scales. There was some speculation, but he had an injury. We got to give him the benefit of the doubt. He was at the club with an injury, but there's no law against going to the club with an injury. It wasn't like, we got to fight in 2 weeks and you're at the club. So I think it is what it is. The gaudy T-shirts, I just think it's an East Coast thing. But Danny's a professional. He's a winner, and he's building a nice resume. And, the dad kind of, I think, is why people don't like Danny that much. Maybe the rap videos, too. I don't know. But to me, he's everything that you want in a fighter. He's willing to fight anybody. He's an honest dude. He gives an honest effort. And he's an action fighter. I'm not bored whenever I see him.
By the way, Javier, how is that show selling out there for March 15th?
Actually, people are very pumped up because it's been a while since we have a fight, a title fight. It wasn't on Calderon had one against Fuentes in 2012. And believe it or not, the Juanma fight is getting a lot of publicity because of what happened 7 years ago. And everybody here in Puerto Rico is really excited because if Juanma wins, they think that they could make Juanma Vasquez Jr. fight. And those two persons hate each other. And people mm-hmm. have been wanting to see that fight for like about 5 years. So everybody's pulling for Juanma, even though we think he's going to get knocked out, to be honest with you. But everybody's kind of pulling for Juanma, so we can maybe get the Vasquez Juanma fight. And the press conference is on Wednesday. It's next Wednesday here in Puerto Rico, and everybody's excited because the Cotto press tour starts on Monday. So it's a big weekend that week
Javier,
in Puerto Rico.
When Golden Boy made the Juanma Ponce de Leon rematch, I thought that was a very adroit move. I know both fighters are a little bit faded past their prime. I know Juanma absolutely just got released by Top Rank after he got knocked out by Mikey Garcia. But the one thing about the Puerto Rican boxing fans, they're still very loyal. And you're right, they're hungry from boxing because there's been a drought in that area. And you guys are waiting for Felix Verdejo to become a legitimate championship-level fighter, which is still at least 2-3 years away. And, you know, Danny Garcia, whether he's a real Puerto Rican, as they say, or just an American Puerto Rican, it's all said and done. He's a very accomplished fighter. And I like that triple header from Showtime. I actually think the Malik Scott-Deontay Wilder fight is very interesting. So I get the sense that, hey, it's boxing, it's Puerto Rico. It should do well, Javier.
One more thing, guys. I am not sure if I'm going to buy Bradley and Pacquiao or Maidana Mayweather, but I'm going to buy the fight on Saturday. And the reason I prefer action fights. I really do. I'm not sure that Pacquiao-Bradley is a lot more different than the first time. And I believe Maidana is going to be Mayweather schooling him. But I like the card on Saturday, so I'm paying for it. And obviously, I'm traveling to the cutoff fight, but I'm paying for the one in this Saturday.
Okay, Javier, listen, have a great time out there next week. Should be a big week for you guys, and thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Gabe, before we get out of here, the Showbox card I thought was interesting. The TMT, the money team, they had a rough night. Badu Jack got knocked down one. And I think just as alarming, I think their best pure prospect is Chris Pearson. I like Chris. I think he has an upside. But he fought a blown-up junior welterweight in the tough Leonardo Tyner, who's just a very steady gatekeeper, just old war horse, who shook him twice and knocked him down. Should we be concerned about that?
Yeah, it was a little concerning. You know, I'm pretty big on Chris, too. And, you know, it's the kind of fight. I mean, Tyner is the kind of guy that will take you rounds. And if you're not in shape, he's kind of a gym rat. He will be ready to go at you. He hadn't lost one in a while, and I think it had been Gary Jean looking at it. It was his last one. He had a little bit of a rough patch, and then he went back on the road. And granted, he beat some suspects and everything, but I think Chris got everything that he needed out of this fight. I mean, I think on some levels he thinks he's ready for the title. He thinks he's ready to go to that next level. And he's a WSB guy who's had some good fights and won all of his WSB fights. But, you know, having the physical tools and some of the skills and attributes doesn't equate to experience. And I think that's what he needs. So I think it was a great fight for him. I'm a little concerned about the chin. But I've never been concerned with it before, and I've seen him take some pretty good shots. So this could have just been one of those things.
Okay. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of Max Boxing and the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, to The Next Round, goodbye, everybody.